All right, let's get started.
You're Mark, right?
That's right.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. So, all right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the number one generative AI podcast in the world. So today we have an extremely special guest. So we have Mark from Couchbase. So for those that don't know, Couchbase is a database company that has been around for a long time. It's one of like the OG database companies who has graciously host agreed to host one of our events. So Mark, welcome. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. Would you maybe just like introduce yourself and tell us about you and like what you do at Couchbase?
Yeah, sure. First, thanks for having me. Honored for the impromptu podcast. It's great to be here and great to have your group here. Again, Mark Gamble here with Couchbase. I'm in product marketing, but have a long background in technical marketing. And I came from being a field SE. So I like to say I have a little bit of technical chops for your average marketer. I focus mainly here on our mobile and edge capabilities, which is a distinction in of itself for Couchbase as a database company. And this specifically is not only our cloud-based database, but the ability to embed data processing with an embeddable database directly into a code base running on a device. And this could be your usual suspects, mobile device, but also IoT devices, tablets, laptops, you name it. And then we have synchronization that handles consistency. So synchronizing from and between the databases running on device and the database in the cloud. So I have a lot of passion around that topic. So I'm excited to talk to you guys today.
Okay. Very cool. So my first kind of question to you is how is Couchbase involved in generative AI?
Sure. I think any database nowadays that's not involved in some way, shape, or form might be at risk of getting a little bit left behind.
That's true.
So we're definitely on the bandwagon, but I think that our engineering team has really been thinking future forward for many years now. Around generative AI, we've always tried to make sure that we have capabilities built into the database beyond just data processing. For example, the ability to call machine learning models for things like, you know, recommenders and image recommendation, the sort of traditional AI. But now with kind of the emergence of publicly available, LLMs like that everybody can take advantage of, we've decided to incorporate some of those things into the actual code base ourselves. So we have an AI-based coding assistant that's built directly into our query workbench. So when developers are adopting Couchbase, they actually get to leverage an AI-based coding assistant to help get their arms around what does it look like to query with Couchbase? What does it look like to work with our SDKs? Can you help me debug this code? And so that's been hugely, hugely popular. That was sort of our first foray into Gen AI within the product itself. But then we also are taking stock of what it is our customers are trying to build. And they're trying to build what we sort of term as an adaptive application. And these are apps that are hyper-personalized, hyper-contextual. They can interact with their human, counterpart almost as if they are a person. And so really kind of our customers realize that's the way to, in fact, engage, their customers and their users in the best possible way. And so as such, we've introduced now vector capabilities into our database to do the things that are mainstays of vector search, like similarity and semantic search. But we also see a huge amount of interest with our customers in RAG, or retrieval augmented generation. And the potential that vector search within our database, especially the one that runs on device, has a facilitating RAG. And so this has been a particular interest, in fact, to our customer base. And I'm proud to say we've just actually launched the beta of our vector search on the embedded database. And as well, we've had vector search in our cloud database here for going on about a month now.
Okay. What is the distinction between the vector database on your cloud versus embedded?
So the The great thing is there is no distinction. It works exactly the same. And so this means that applications can actually leverage vector search in the embedded database the same way they can on the cloud database. And so a permutation of some use cases that we might see, we know that a mobile device is resource constrained. So there's only so much processing that it can actually take care of. But for edge use cases, sometimes a little bit of loss of precision is absolutely understandable and okay for the fact that you're getting it faster, you're getting it on device. Mm-hmm. But there are certain cases where, the prompt is way too detailed, or the corpus of information that needs to feed this response needs to process faster than the device can do. So by this hybrid approach of being able to now pass these things off instead of running on device, that's going to require more horsepower. Let's pass that particular prompt up to vector search in the cloud, where we have the horsepower to actually facilitate getting an answer as fast as the user expects.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so that was a lot of information. I'm still trying to process. So you mentioned a couple of things. Working backwards, the embedded databases. So these are vector stores similar to Pinecone, et cetera. But you're trying to optimize that to run on like these edge devices, run on mobile devices, maybe IoT you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would imagine IoT is severely resource constrained. So do you have any rough numbers for how big this database would be? And
sure.
Like what are the performance gains handling this locally versus running on the cloud, or how much money it would save the customers to not have like a large vector database for all their users running?
Sure. Great question. So I'll see if I can sort of take them in order. First off, the embeddable database, actually the Couchbase et al. Is much more than just a vector store.
Yeah.
So this is just a data access pattern that we've now added. Mm. So the kind of the next part of the question essentially is, you know, when we're talking about running vector search in the embedded database, we're on a, you know, given mobile device, we're going to start seeing the horsepower on those actually increase exponentially because, you know, Apple and the producers are starting to actually build more AI capabilities directly into the base OS. But in the case of IoT, obviously extremely resource constrained. So the database itself is only like 2 meg to embed. And of course, that's unhydrated. No data is in it. And it's all, you're subject to how much data you can actually store based on the physical
capability. Well, the database is only 20 megabytes.
Yeah, it's very, very small. Between 2 and 5, depending on how, you know, what platform you're going to embed. And so it's really, and not only that, but for IoT-specific use cases, we have a C API. Yeah. So this is what allows us to, we've got folks, MOOC, in fact, our host tonight, has embedded our database to a Raspberry Pi device.
That's what I was going to say. You can stick that on a little Raspberry Pi.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
100%. And then, but the nice thing is that that same embedded database, Couchbase Lite, running on a Raspberry Pi can synchronize with Couchbase Lite running on a phone, or can sync with Couchbase Capella running in the cloud, and between all of the three. And that's because of our built-in synchronization for that consistency. So one of the, you guys can also, you know, cut me off if I start going a little too fast,
no,
but a huge differentiator, what is one of the reasons why people run the database on device? Well, first and foremost, it's to try to eliminate dependencies on the internet.
Yeah.
Because the internet introduces latency and introduces a huge point of unreliability. But there's also, beyond the speed and availability, there's this kind of security angle, especially starts to come up when we talk about RAG and we talk about AI. So one of the things that...
Before we get too deep into RAG, I think a lot of our listeners are aware about it, but maybe can we go into a little bit details about, like, you know, what is RAG and like, why would you use it?
Sure. So let's start with the large language model. That's out there. You know, everybody knows OpenAI and ChatGPT. These models were trained on a corpus of data, and eventually that training ended on a specific date in 2023. And so that large language model, if you ask it about anything that happened past that time, it doesn't know about it. When we start to also think about corporations that want to leverage that large language model on their own bespoke information, maybe their own SDKs or their own documentation, they need a way to actually inform the model that's already got its basic training, all of the stuff it doesn't know yet. And so that's where retrieval augmented generation is a concept that says, let's feed the corpus of information to that large language model that it doesn't know, but needs to know to inform a more precise answer, a more precise response. And so it's a simple in concept, but it's basically you ask a simple question and pass it all of the context that it might need, the model, pass it its context that it can use to answer correctly. And we're actually going to show a demonstration later tonight where you can ask a large language model a generic question, and it will give you a generic answer. But then we'll show upload some documentation, ask the same question. Now it comes back hyper-precise because it's augmented with that additional information that it needs to answer correctly. Okay. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, that does help. Now, you mentioned that this can be used to supplement any of the LLMs. Does this work on any large language model, or would this only be working on specific models that Couchbase has some sort of integration with?
Sure, great question. It's going to be completely agnostic. I mean, the way we see it is you can bring your own model because we think that there's dozens, no, arguably hundreds now, there's going to be tens of thousands very soon as we start getting bespoke models. And so RAG is kind of agnostic when it comes to, which model you use. All it takes is you need to make sure if you're passing vectors as kind of that RAG information, the extra context, make sure you're using the same model for the vector embedding. So it's, in other words, if you're passing off to a large language model, say, here's extra information, make sure it can understand that by embedding the vectors in it using the same model.
Makes sense.
Do you guys recommend any kind of specific embedding model that might perform better with your database?
We try and we don't want to necessarily be prescriptive because there's so much nascent technology out there. So at risk of seeming evasive, we really are going to stand firm kind of with this mantra of bring your own model and this database is going to work with it.
Is there any specific types of data that Couchbase is good at dealing with? Maybe it could be like location data or just like regular text data. I don't know if there's anything that sets Couchbase apart from the competition in terms of like the breadth of the data that can be stored and retrieved with it.
Sure. In just a more generic sense, everything in Couchbase is stored as JSON. And JSON has the capability of basically storing any format. And by that, I mean, if you can get an array of just, straight standard natural language text, everything, you can do time series data, you name it, it can actually be stored as JSON. And so that's why we kind of say JSON is the ideal data storage pattern for AI because of this. But that doesn't necessarily set us apart from the other JSON databases per se by itself. But when you start to consider then the fact that we can take that concept now and put it on a mobile device and synchronize between it, and we can call it using SQL, something that a lot of other NoSQL vendors out there don't support. That's where we start to separate from the pack. It's, yes, we have vector store. Yes, we're a JSON database. And yes, we have these other things, but when you start to consider the fact that we also have, the built-in search, and we have built-in, eventing, built-in analytics, that's where we start to now, for our customers, reduce the stack of required different types of databases and replace it with a single database platform like Couchbase. And we hear time and time again, that's kind of a fundamental differentiator for us.
So one thing that I've heard from other databases, not necessarily Couchbase, is that with a lot of these JSON databases, they have a hard time scaling. have you run into issues scaling in your database at Couchbase? So, like, for example, if I wanted to have, like, a really large, let's say, like, petascale vector database, is that possible?
100%. In fact, I'm proud to say that we have some independent benchmarks out there, you know, showing us scaling, you know, far beyond the competitors when it comes to, you know, not only speed, but also amount of data that we can store. And there's a couple of reasons for this. One reason is that we can actually automatically, what we call shard or split out the JSON document database across multiple nodes. And that's where we create a cluster. But we decided to take it even beyond that and say, if you have multiple clusters, we have built-in replication between these clusters that just happens automatically. And so scale is built in, and almost for our customers is an afterthought. They don't even have to think about it. It just happens automatically. And so the scale to be able to handle the immensity of data that AI requires is kind of built in. And then we also have this concept of, you know, the everything that I was talking about, our analytics, the capabilities for running queries, the capabilities for running eventing are all, and search are all different services that you can actually tune up or down. So we call this multidimensional scaling. And the concept there is, if we have a search, a vector search heavy application, put 10 of our 20 nodes just running the search service, for example. And whereas, you know, if we're going to have maybe a search light but query heavy, amp up across your nodes and clusters the appropriate services to facilitate this. And so we're trying to really be built with scale in mind. And because, you know, that's essentially AI requires that the more data you have, the better AI gets. And that's where we think our scale is really going to play nicely in the AI arena.
So you mentioned that there is syncing between, different parts of the database.
Yep.
Now, I'm curious how that works as like a customer. So does this mean that I would need to fully hand off control of the data to like some sort of managed Couchbase solution? Or would I be able to potentially run this on my own hardware, maybe like on some other cloud like AWS? Like what are the logistics there of how that would work?
Great question, because it also leads to another differentiator for us. So while we do have that fully hosted and managed database as a service, and that's for, you know, ease of adoption and quickness of deployment, that kind of stuff, our underpinnings that what we still maintain to this day are what we call self-managed environments. And so our customers can actually take Couchbase Server, install it wherever they want. And not only that, but we're also container friendly. So we have an operator. So you can install it in Kubernetes, and we have an operator that will automatically handle scaling, failover, all of that stuff for our customers. And so they have the flexibility to choose where they actually will handle data processing and AI processing. And that becomes a huge differentiator for us in industries like iGaming, you know, online betting, where you can't just run your data processing for online betting up in a cloud somewhere. It has to be with, you know, geo-fenced within a given geography for regulatory concerns. And so, for example, you know, Paddy Power Betfair came to us specifically because of some of these problems they were having. They have to run it in a data center that is vetted and approved by regulatory bodies.
Sorry, who is that again?
Paddy Power Betfair.
Okay.
And they run an online, Betfair is an online betting application. And it's one of the most heavily regulated industries out there. And so they couldn't just leverage any AWS region or Azure region, that they would have been out of compliance. They absolutely had to run it in their own self-managed data centers. Mm-hmm. And we gave them that capability.
Speaking of compliance and data location, do you guys work with HIPAA compliant companies at all?
Yeah, we do. We are HIPAA compliant in our database as a service, to the best of my knowledge. I hope I'm not wrong there. But we recognize that a lot of our customers require these type of certifications, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so we're also looking at federal certifications to start to ramp up in government, for example. Mm-hmm. So absolutely recognize that those are important. And so that's why we want to support them for our customers.
Yeah, I think medicine and biology is going to be a big use case for these Gen AI applications. And Mark and I were playing around with a toy project, and we realized that we can't legally release it without making it HIPAA compliant. It turns out that is a lot harder than it seems.
It can be. Yeah. And an interesting side note, the same reason that Paddy Power Betfair leverages our ability to isolate within a given state data processing are the same reasons a lot of our healthcare customers will come to us, because the ability to actually isolate data processing within, you know, leave it on a device or within a hospital, but only synchronize with precision the stuff that's not sensitive out to the other, you know, other parts of the application, this becomes a huge benefit because they're able to maintain stringent security, data privacy, and governance, but still, you know, realize the benefit of kind of this holistic cloud-based architecture.
So you mentioned a bedding use case. Can you talk about some other use cases that you've seen built using maybe Gen AI specifically and vector databases?
Yeah, I mean, they sort of run the gamut. It's interesting. Things are still so nascent. We don't have a ton of customers leveraging vector search for their applications in production yet, because they've just come out. But we've been doing a lot of talking with our customers about what they want to do. I happened to attend the Game Developers Conference recently here in San Francisco. And one of my main questions of the developers that came by the booth was, you know, what are you going to do? Where do you see AI, you know, taking the gaming market? And overwhelmingly, it came back to this concept of the non-player characters and the worlds and lands that you're in, making them more realistic and human-like. So imagine that the non-player characters in most games today, they have about two or three things they can say, you know, because it's all in a predetermined script. But imagine instead if they would address you by name and they knew where you came from and all your awards and they knew your teammates. And or even better, imagine if you could give them orders and send them on quests on their own to gather you more points and more awards, these kind of things. And so that's an interesting kind of use case that I gravitated towards because I love playing games. And we've got a fair number of customers that are leveraging us to power their games.
You know, I think that's an extremely interesting use case to be able to have better NPCs in games. I think it would just make games like way more dynamic and fun. And also, I think that it would be incredibly important to be able to run that locally because you don't necessarily want to have the latency of trying to hit a server and then come back. Especially because, like, I think that you don't need a ton of data to make an interesting non-player character. And I think that, you know, being able to, you know, run your database there, that seems to me like over the next couple of years, we're going to have like a really interesting future and the games are going to be like so much more fun.
I think so too. It's exciting time.
Yeah, I'm really excited, especially if you can imagine that on mobile, right. These low power devices, that will be incredible.
Yeah. That's right. I also think that just, you know, spitballing use cases of something that you could have for one of your smaller databases that are running, you know, on device, you could make search within the device potentially a lot more powerful. Like, I could imagine, maybe like my phone search, it could be aware of the applications and data within the phone itself, maybe like my emails or documents, and have like a significantly better search than what it could exist right now. Because I think right now, when I'm searching for something on my phone, I basically have, to know where it is. Because if I'm searching, like, I'm not going to find it. But, you know, with something like this, I can see that, really increasing the usability of my phone.
100% agreed. And that's one of the value propositions that we're putting forth is, hey, run it on your phone. It brings you that speed and immediacy that you need, but also imagine that now you can also do it on the plane or on the elevator or on the subway. You don't have to worry about being tethered to some cloud to facilitate that. So spot on. I agree.
that might also ease customers' concerns over data privacy, especially if it's personal data that, you know, they're a little concerned about getting out in the wild and, you know, it's running on your phone or whatever local device. And that seems like a much better privacy answer.
Absolutely. In fact, that's a lot of prospects that we're talking to when we're interviewing them about your future uses. Another predominant use case is we want to run, you know, do RAG and run locally because of security concern. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to push any of this past the confines of our prem, for example. So that's another huge, huge piece of it. Absolutely.
So one question that I'm sure a lot of our listeners probably would like to know is the costs. So like,
oh boy.
Yeah. You know, how much does Couchbase cost? And I know, I'm sure it probably depends on like the data size and a bunch of things. But, you know, if I'm trying to like run it, like what can I expect to pay based off of,
you know? Yeah, maybe how much does it cost to get started exactly. As a single person? And then as you scale to tens of thousands, hundreds, and then maybe millions, how does the cost scale?
I hope I don't make you guys upset. I'm probably going to sidestep because I'm the marketing guy. I don't want to get myself necessarily in trouble, except I will say there's a free trial. Mm-hmm. And so getting started is absolutely risk-free. And that's just go to cloud.couchbase.com/signup. And you could actually spin up your own cluster very quickly. If we do want to get kind of into some ballpark figures, I'd probably defer to some of my sales colleagues in the room.
Sure.
And but I appreciate your understanding on that. Yeah,
we'll try to put some numbers in the show notes if we get an answer.
And if it'll be the lowest cost of total ownership, though, by far. We have our studies that have been benchmark-based. We've actually taken and tried to, you know, basically convert those into what would that be for cost of operations per second and that kind of stuff. So we come out, you know, lowest by far against all of the other major competitors. So I'll be happy to share that with you guys.
Maybe to answer this question or ask this question slightly differently, how do you charge for your non-hosted solution, like especially embedded on mobile devices where we're not hitting your servers? How does that charge the customer?
Essentially, what you'll pay for is our synchronization. So we have something called the Sync Gateway. And you'll get bundles. We don't want to try and actually count and charge for every instance of Couchbase Lite running a device. We have a game vendor, Lodum Games. They have 800,000 downloads of their game. That would not be economic for them and hard for us to track. So it's really at the server levels and at the synchronization tier where we actually charge.
The points where I guess it costs you guys money to manage those services.
Sure. Or in the case of self-managed, you know, that's where essentially all of the security and activity of data movement happens.
And going more specifically than like how it's charged, is it charged like potentially based off of like the number of queries that you make, the size of the data? Is it like, I guess, what kind of granularity is, you know, the cost?
Sure. It's going to be mostly around kind of the memory and horsepower that you throw at it. So we don't charge for data volume. We don't charge for individual services. All the services come as part and parcel. You choose which ones you want to turn on and off. The only ones that are a slight uptick are our managed synchronization on the back end that we call app services. So that's the hosted version of Sync Gateway that I just mentioned.
Okay.
Nice. So I'm thinking, fast forwarding a few years, where do you see Couchbase going with this vector, local on-device vector store, and all the current use cases that you've seen? If you extrapolate that out maybe a few years, where the local models get more performant, hardware on these local devices gets more performant. What do you see down the line?
We pretty much have, we pretty much think that our customers are all trying to achieve what we call an adaptive application. And these are applications that will automatically sort of change and adjust our context based on the individual who happens to be using it. And, you know, simple in concept, it's been a goal for decades now, and we think we're finally close to that. And so ultimately, everything that we do is to help facilitate our customers to build that hyper-contextual, hyper-personal, super fast application that runs anywhere and everywhere without relying on the internet. So I know that's not necessarily a giant forward-thinking epiphany so much as I think I'm really proud of our engineering teams. I think they're forward-thinking. You know, they came out with embedding or building in AI capabilities to the mobile database in 2014. And now with vector search running in the mobile database, I think that just we're trying to really stay ahead of the curve and make sure our customers can build those adaptive apps.
That's awesome.
Sounds good. I'm curious, is there any like particular like nagging hard problems that Couchbase is working on right now?
Sure. Steve will actually talk about it a bit tonight. There's going to be, because of this huge explosion in LLMs and the models, we're going to be, there's going to be calling models at the edge, calling models on device, calling models in the cloud. And then there's going to have to be, for context, save those interactions. And so data is going to, the need to store these interactions so that LLMs will remember where you left off and you can pick back up they can also add to their corpus of understanding, you have to store that data. So we see that this just footprint of data processing around facilitating AI, making it smarter, reducing hallucinations, is going to require ever and ever expanding capabilities to store data efficiently. And that's where our engineers and our founder, Steve, who's talking tonight, are really looking, because we think that's going to be a big problem in the industry, and we think that's our opportunity. So yeah, that's where we're really looking.
I think it's just like almost like an infinite problem where you're able to just constantly try to improve the performance, cost, reliability, and I think that it's, that is an incredibly hard problem to just, just constantly work on improving the quality of the product. Mm. So that's pretty much all I had. I don't know, Shashank, if you had anything else.
No, that's it. Maybe just some context for our listeners. We are here at the Couchbase offices in Santa Clara for one of our bigger events, which we do once a month. And we're going to hear from the founder, some technical talks, and see what we can build with Couchbase tonight. So just another reminder, if you're here in the Bay Area, stop by for one of our meetups, the bigger, smaller, you're welcome to all of them. Or if you're in Austin, we recently started another chapter of our meetup. If you guys are interested in hosting us there, please let one of us know.
That's right. Is there anything else that you want to mention that we didn't ask you about?
Anything you
want
to plug?
Yeah.
From your personal life, too.
Let's see. We're going to be at Google next week. We're unveiling our application integration connector with Google. And what that means is now directly from our database, you can call into any of the Google Cloud services and integrate directly with them. So like Vertex AI, for example, we're building it and we'll be demonstrating this integration next week.
Can you explain Vertex AI? Actually, I'm not familiar with it.
It's basically an AI service that's hosted, built by and hosted on Google Cloud, Google Cloud platform.
It's their AI suite of tools like Bedrock.
Oh,
Amazon's equivalent.
So for those that don't know, Bedrock, just a brief tangent here, is a thing that hosts LLM models by Amazon. So it is a thing where they have a bunch of the open source as well as closed source models that are all just hosted by Amazon. So you don't have to worry about like actually, setting up, installing it, running it yourself. You can just, use Amazon for Bedrock. So I assume Vertex is similar to that.
That, and they offer a bunch of tooling to help you work with LLMs, train, do inference, use like a bunch of different kinds of models apart from just LLMs, image recognition, it's their ML suite of tools.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because I think Bedrock is specifically more for like hosting
that
already exist.
Gotcha.
It might have some training capabilities. I'm not sure. I don't want to.
Regardless, the rest of Amazon anyways. Probably has a bunch of tools.
Yeah, that's right. Amazon has got a bunch of tools. But anyways, yeah.
But
digression.
Speaking of Google Next, so you guys are building. I don't know if we mentioned this. Probably the world's first on-device vector store. At least I haven't seen any other companies try to do that. And I know Google is also probably the first to market with a local on-device LLM that's built into the phone, available to all the apps through like shared Android APIs. Do you guys have specific plans to integrate with this on-device LLM or any examples on your website?
Certainly goals to do so. The marketer in me says, oh, yeah.
We're all over those guys.
Because, like, that's on device. You guys are on device.
Exactly.
Seems like a good
thing. And Apple is going to have their suite of callable models that are run at part and parcel with the underlying OS.
Maybe Google's models running on these Apple phones,
yeah,
if we're to believe recent rumors.
So we'll see what the future holds. But absolutely, we again, want to be agnostic when it comes to how what models and how our customers leverage them. We just want to say you've got the hooks right from the database to be able to do it. And we don't want to dictate or prescribe to anybody. It's what you want to use is what we plan to support.
Excellent. And well, yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. I know we're just about out of time because we have an event starting in 10 minutes and I hear people kind of like queuing up outside, but yeah, we really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah,
this was awesome.
This was fun, guys. As you could tell, get a couple of yerba mates in me and I could talk all night. So, but I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Of course.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.